Good morning. This is Henry Harris, and it is Thursday, October 25th. Welcome to another installment of the Weekly Amuna Teleconference. I want to share with you, before we begin our regular kind of presentation, a beautiful and inspiring call that I got from someone who called to register for the upcoming conference. She was describing how she's been so touched by how the understanding of Inside Out has helped her to see just how thoroughly the divine gifts are involved in our lives. You know, that how consciousness itself, our understanding of life ongoingly, moment to moment, is something that we're reliant on divine help for, you know. And she thought about it, and she wondered, wait, do we see, what is, you know, we ask about this, I think I'm getting this correct, we inquire on a daily basis of Hashem for understanding. You know, we say, Atachonim Adam Das, you God, you're the one who grants us Das, understanding or consciousness. And she was curious to see what Jewish teachings say about that. So she has a book by Rabbi Victor Miller called Praise My Soul, which is a line-by-line commentary of Rabbi Miller's on the entire Siddur. And she mentioned it happens to be a book of over 600 pages. She turned the book, she opened the book, the first place she turned, it landed on the line, on the page that describes the line, Atachonim Adam Das. So that was kind of touching and meaningful. And then sure enough, Rabbi Miller describes how it's important for people to understand that it's not just that it's our parnasa, it's not just that our income, our physical livelihood or other things we're dependent on God for. It's that it's much farther than that. It's even our ability to think and see the world, even our das, even our consciousness is a divine gift, and that's something that people have to know. God, you are the one who grants man das. You are the one who gives man understanding. And she was so struck by the fact that, of course, Torah is pointing to that. Of course it's the case that it's reality, that you know, not just the world out there and the circumstances and the parnasa, et cetera, are determined by the Almighty, but even our inner world, even our consciousness. And I was struck by that because, of course, it's a beautiful story. But on top of that, I'm reminded of a statement that I've shared in the past. There's a beautiful, there's a Mishnah in Avos that says, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem, beloved is a human being, that he was created in the image of the Creator. He, which on a simple level means that he's a creator. He is creative. He can fashion worlds. He has influence over the world. And then further, the Mishnah says right afterwards, Chiba Yisera Shano Daslo, an even greater measure of his belovedness, of a person's belovedness to the Creator, is Shano Daslo, that he can become conscious of that he can have an actual glimpse and a perception of the fact that he is a fashioner of worlds. He is, that the Almighty is pumping his consciousness, this is my understanding, the Almighty is pumping his consciousness in a manner that allows him to live in and see and create new worlds of his own, in his own internal experience. You know, that's a profoundly beautiful thing unto itself. It's even more beautiful that we can sense that. We can actually be cognizant of the fact that the Almighty is creating, is endowing us with this creative force that shows up and comes to life inside of us. Now further, the next line of the Mishnah says, Chaviv in Yisrael, Shenikru Banim Lamakom, that beloved are the Jewish people that are called children of the Almighty, and then it continues, an even greater measure of belovedness, that they can know that they can see and feel and experience that. And I guess, you know, I like to point out that this conversation that we're having about the Inside Out, the profound meaningfulness and the profound truth of seeing and realizing that the world is is not coming to us from the outside. There aren't independent realities and power sources that are driving and causing our experience. Rather, it's moment to moment through the gift of divine thought. It's coming from the inside out. That's a life-changing truth. It's a profoundly beautiful and life-changing truth. And it's something that's relevant to every human being in the world. Chaviv Adam, beloved is a human being, says the Mishnah. Every human being is created in this manner and can become even, can sense and see that how beloved he is to the Almighty through gaining a glimpse of how that works. But then it says about the Jewish people and how fortunate are we that we're called children of the Almighty. It's not just that there's this profound universal truth that we can all kind of partake of and glimpse and sense. You know, and that's what reminded me when the woman shared with me the story that she was curious to see where this Torah referenced this. She opened a book of over 600 pages to inquire about where Rabbi Miller speaks of Atachonin Laramdas, and she found the page, the first page she turned to. That's what a parent does for a child. You know, it's the ground floor is so profoundly beautiful that every one of us has access to this understanding. We're all made in the image of the Creator. Every human being is made in the image of the Creator and can sense that. And yet there's something profoundly distinct and that we're children. We are beloved sons and daughters of the Almighty, who is so desirous of our turning in a personal way. He's the author of this universal intelligence. He's sustaining moment to moment. Every human being is living inside of this wisdom. And yet there is something distinctive about us that we have this privilege, such a privilege that we're children. We're being attended to in a distinctive way. The parent, the love of a parent to a child. So I was so struck by that story, and I'm so grateful that the person shared that with me. And I now want to take a moment to mention that, to elaborate, she's registering for the conference, which is just over a week away. It's a week from this coming Sunday. That's in 10 days. I want to make clear, I don't believe that anyone has to come to the conference in order to gain the benefit of the beautiful wisdom of the inside-out understanding. I think that, you know, for whatever reason, if there's a... I don't feel that it's absolutely required and that you're in trouble or you're at risk of missing out of something you could miss out. You know, I just want to say, though, it's an opportunity. It's a profound opportunity that to gather together with hundreds of people all interested and sincerely looking for an inside understanding with such gifted teachers, such people who've had such insight into how this works and so much experience in sharing the understanding in a way that's been so helpful in relieving so much distress. You know, there's a tremendous amount of goodwill and humility and sincerity that'll be present over these 3 days. And so I really want to encourage everyone to grab the opportunity. Okay. All right. That's my intro to my intro. Now I want to share with you a little bit more about what I'm seeing and how this is helping in my ability to navigate my life. And I'll share with you a number of years ago, I was really upset with a certain individual who I felt had caused quite a bit of damage to myself and my family. And, you know, I was really, like, just super upset and bothered. And... yeah, let's just say that. I was really upset, and there was a lot of emotional internal pain about it and anger. And I moved on with my life, you know, and over the course of these years, as you know, I've been learning about these ideas and kind of interested in the inside-out understanding. Now, what's interesting is that only weeks ago, I was looking to undertake a certain project that I knew I would benefit from help on. And when I was thinking about who I might turn to for help, this person's name came to mind. And it was almost like it was striking to me that the name came to mind, but it really did make sense to me. Like, yeah, he's really an obvious fit. Like, for a variety of reasons, he's uniquely capable and talented, and I really do sense that he would like to help. And I was struck by that. I was really struck by the fact that I don't think I've been upset and, you know, as stewing in anger and resentment toward an individual as strongly as this person for, I don't know, as long as I can remember. And then here I was like, oh, right, of course. That's really the obvious choice. And lo and behold, I did reach out to this person, and I actually asked for his help, and I paid him. I paid him for the time that he spent helping me. And I was like a little astonished by it, because it wasn't like I felt this, you know, dramatic elation of, you know, this moment of profound liberation. You know, but at the same time, I had to step back and acknowledge, wow, I really don't fall into and revisit, you know, loops of anger and resentment. That's what I would do for the years that I was really upset. I would find my internal world navigating, kind of falling back into this kind of internal dialogue of like how terrible and how, you know, self-centered and how inconsiderate and, you know, and like real upset. And I had to acknowledge, gosh, that's not only not there, but I'm actually quite open to, you know, seeking him out and asking for help and paying him. And I wondered, like, how does that work, you know? And I obviously, we talk about this every week, but I want to share with you what I've, you know, what I gained, what I take away from how this internal shift took place, which really would have seemed impossible to me several years ago. So here's how it works. You know, this is a little bit of a review. I think that the step one for me, it begins with an interest in and a curiosity about what is true. What is true about, and I guess for our purposes, for the conversation we're having, about what's true about our experience of life, our psychological experience, our feeling states. What's true about the feelings that I'm having, the moods I'm having, my overall psychological experience. What's true about it? What's true is that it's coming. Those experiences, the feelings I'm having are coming from the gift of divine thought in this moment, which varies from expansive to constricted to peaceful to insecure. It's a flow, an unceasing flow of the gift of divine thought. And the Almighty tells us in many places that he's providing us with that flow. It's not like a surprise, right? And then the flip side of that, of what's true, is what's not true, what cannot be true. You know, the profound implication of what's true is what cannot be true, and how incredibly valuable that can be, that I can know it can't be coming from the people and the places and the circumstances, the events, the past, as much as it can look and feel that it's coming from those things. There's something inside of me deep, deep down that recognizes truth for its own sake, that knows what's true, that knows what's not true. I have a GPS. I have this neshama that deep down knows what's true and is not reliant on any corroboration in a physical world. It's just a recognition inside of me that was endowed to me by God, a divine wisdom connection that can know what's true and can know what's not true. And as I'm open to that, even slightly, even a little bit curious about that, what happens is I start to gain some healthy separation, I might say, a slight degree of less involvement in processing and engaging and managing and dealing with the busy thoughts, the fearful, insecure thoughts. This guy did this to me. This happened to me in my past. How am I going to change those things? I have this feeling is unpleasant to me, and it's coming from this source. And how do I get rid of the source or change the source? All of that outside-in thought, as I become interested in and curious about the truth about that, it's only normal that the human being who senses something about truth, the logic built into us says, well, then step away from that. Like, why would you, back to the metaphor of the flat earth, like at the point that even a person who's been so conditioned to feel fearful as he steps onto a big boat, if he really senses the world is not flat and that it's impossible to fall over the face of the earth, there will be a point where he stops going there. It just internally, and the logic within us kind of knows, like, that's not a helpful place to go, And even as he might feel, and this is what I noticed, is that even as the feelings show up, the feelings of recrimination and bitterness and resentment and victim hurt stuff, those feelings will show up. I don't resist or resent the presence of those feelings as much because I kind of know what's true about them. I know that it's human to, run those thoughts. I know that it's human to flow with a variety of thoughts in this moment that are coming from a source beyond me. I'm not the author of them. It's human to flow with insecure thought, and the feelings I'm getting in this moment of insecurity are simply as an expression of that flow. So I have less judgment. I have a little less judgment about my own kind of, venturing into that emotional territory. It doesn't feel as unsettling or threatening to me to go into that emotional space because, like I said, I know something about it, And so as that process, step one, knowing what's true and what's not true, and then step two, allowing us, kind of sensing, I don't say these steps as like do these things. I'm just describing how I see the evolution occurs inside of me. Step two being I gain a slight degree of suspicion. So what happens is as I do that, step three in this evolution is that they start to soften. Those strong feelings, they move on. It's normal when I'm not, as I say over and over, also Elokim es ha'adam yashar. God made us yashar. He made us strong and healthy and wise and humble. V'hem bikshu cheshbonos rabos. It's our kind of giving the playing time and the concern for and the sense of, oh, I need to go out and change my feeling state because I'm threatened. I need to attend to this kind of thing out there. That's what keeps it alive. That's what keeps it in place. There's so many moments of Yashrus in our day that we don't even notice. The presence of that wisdom is so much a part of our lives that it's a little bit, I'll speak for myself, it goes under the radar. And then Baruch Hashem, there are times where I sense the wisdom showing up inside of me and allowing me to stand on my two feet, to let go, to move forward, to navigate. So that's kind of me in step three in the evolution, is that these stronger feelings start to fade. And then guess what? Because of that same Yashrus, new feelings start to, new thoughts show up. And of course, the feelings associated with those new thoughts. And that's what I'm seeing. I don't, on the one hand, I'm astonished by my step, the action I took. Like, it really was illogical. It just seemed like obvious to me. Of course, go get help from this guy. And yet, in a certain sense, I'm not astonished because I know that even as it's miraculous, it's also normal. It's human. It's human for divine thought to show up, for us to, we are a portal. We are connected right this moment to divine thought, to new wisdom, to new thought. It's, you know, it is human to experience miraculous shifts. You know, it's human to feel stuck, to feel that we're in some kind of an impossible situation. But it's so normal to then settle down and get unstuck and then to see something new and, you know, and to move forward in life. And I just want to say a few caveats. I want to be clear. It's not like I don't feel I had a role. I did. It's not like I don't feel there's a free will choice involved in this process. I do think that there is a desire for truth, that we all have the ability to choose. You know, we all have the ability to lean into a desire for truth. And of course, we have the ability to, you know, to lean into our feelings of hurt, our feelings, our loop, you know, our loop of anger and resentment and victim-like. And I can certainly sense that I've chosen that. You know, I've chosen the loop of anger and other things in the past, and I'm, you know, still in some ways I still do that. But I do realize that there were times and moments where I sensed the option to look in a new direction. And I did. And yet, even with acknowledging my role, and I don't undervalue the role. It's an indispensable role in my own life. Of course, my choice is an indispensable role. Even with that, it seems to me that it's, you know, the magnitude of the shift feels disproportionate to the effort I put in. You know, that's something that seems to me to be true. So that's something I was I'm reflecting on and excited to share. And I'm going to take a moment and pause here and see if there's something that someone would like to comment on or raise a question about. So the floor is open. And as I've become comfortable doing, I will kind of continue sharing and speaking. Let's see. What else would I like to share? You know, a message that has been meaningful to me, and that's become a little more clear to me over time, is the opportunity to see how my experience, there's an impersonal quality to my experience. You know, there's a beautiful humility available. A beautiful, beautiful, liberating humility available in recognizing that insecure thought, which is really the source of all of our mistakes, you know, all of the chataim, all of the transgressions we commit. The Gemara says about it: "Ein adam chayteim elim kein nichnas baruch shtus." Person does not transgress unless there arises within him a ruach shtos, a spirit of insanity, a spirit of foolishness. That's insecure thought. I mean, that's just another way of saying insecure thought. It's a mistaken understanding of reality. A person doesn't transgress unless he kind of gets lost in such a worldview. Now, it's real that the choice that we make inside of that worldview, that Ruach Shtus is a chet, you know, it's a real action, and there's consequences to it. It's not constructive. It could be a harsh word. It could be a moment of reactivity. It could be a moment of escape. Whatever the chet is, it there is a personal responsibility quality to it. At the same time, it's the human job description. You know, there's no human being that's not subject to insecure thought and to the prospect of getting temporarily lost in insecure thought. So in that sense, while it's personal that I've made a mistake in choice that has consequences, it's not personal to me that I have insecure thought, that I'm subject to that. And that can be so liberating in terms of the willingness to accept responsibility and face it, you know, the ability to do tshuva for my mistakes, or at least just to be present to an area in my life where I sense I'm making mistakes or I have mistaken understanding. It's very tempting to run away or to blame. These are forms of escape, you know. That was the initial, by the way, the very first chait in the history of the human experience was Adam and Chava. And the fundamental mistake, it was true that they ate from the tree. That was, you know, that was the mistake. But then the kind of getting into the, you know, the next stage of the chait, which really kind of sealed their fate, was when the Almighty turned to them and said, what happened? And each one kind of passed the buck. You know, Adam said, well, the wife that you gave me, you know, he blamed God and he blamed his wife. And then the wife said, the snake, right? So insecure thought brings with it a temptation not to face our lives, not to face the work, the holy job of our lives, to want to run away or to want to blame. That's every human being, you know. But to become more aware of how true this is for every human being, at least for me, at a certain point, it helps me to then say, okay, I can look at this, you know. This is a job. I don't, you know, it's like a person has an inbox in his job and he shows up every morning to his job and there's papers in the inbox. So he spends his morning processing the papers, you know, and then he takes his lunch break and he's grateful that his inbox is empty. He goes out for lunch, an hour later he comes back and lo and behold, there's a whole bunch of papers in his inbox. Ha, what business, what kind? He gets all angry and resentful. How come other? You know, it's silly to be resentful because it's his job. Like, what else are you here for? You know, we're here to face the tendency we have to get lost in insecure thought. It's true that there's a personal responsibility to it. It is our personal life. At the same time, it's not personal that we're all dealing with that. And to me, that's what allows me to be more open to looking at where I've dropped the ball, you know, where I've dropped the ball. So it can be so valuable to see the impersonal quality to how human beings get insecure. Because I'll do tshuva. I'll face it. I won't run away from that. I won't blame. And then on the flip side, the impersonal is also helpful in seeing where the gift of new thought, of, you know, insight, of creativity, of that, you know, seeing the impersonal quality to that is also profound, because like in this experience of my having a shift toward this person who I had so much upset toward, there's so much gratitude for the fact that I don't feel like I didn't single-handedly produce this internal feeling. I'm not this you know, I'm not this great Nidos warrior that transformed my. I don't feel that way. I don't disacknowledge the role I played, but there's a certain awe and gratitude that is meaningful to me of how I can see divine thought showing up and helping me in a way that's outsized, independent of my role, even as I value my role. So that's been very valuable to me. The ability to I'm not ashamed of my proclivity, or I, you know, I mean, I have a recognition of there being, you know, like it, there is something about not be, like I'm more inclined to accept responsibility for the mistakes I make because of my understanding of how human that is. And at the same time, I'm not, it's also like I'm not, I don't feel haughty about the accomplishments I'm seeing, or at least not as haughty as I might have, which is another aspect of, you know, that's another aspect of insecurity, you know, when a feeling of I did this, I accomplished this, I'm so good. It's that's a shade of insecurity as well. So that's my thought about the impersonal quality of the of how thought is working and how I get to partake of, you know, both of the whole variety, the whole variety of thought. You know, I guess I want to encourage people. You know, to the extent that I can, I want to encourage people. I want to share what to me is a message of hope. I mean, there are times where I really just want somebody to tell me, yeah, it's really bad what this guy did to you, or it's really wrong what, you know, this person is doing, and it makes so much sense that you're so upset. There are times where I kind of feel like that, and I kind of would like that, and I'm not against, I think empathy and compassion are a good thing. I think that the deeper understanding and the more helpful understanding of compassion and empathy is the ability to appreciate I can be with somebody's pain. I can be with my own pain in a way that I can acknowledge the hurt, the feeling of hurt, the feeling of suffering. There's people suffer. We suffer. And at the same time, hold on to a truth that it's not because somebody did it to you. I don't mean to blame the person, or just get your act together and you won't feel this way. It hurts. It hurts. If we knew how to feel differently, we would. If we knew how to step away from the suffering and the loop of anger and upset we might feel, we would. And I feel the pain. It hurts. I don't surrender the truth that I know that it can look and feel differently without anything changing on the world outside. It can look and feel different. It's already true that there's nothing wrong, but I recognize and appreciate that it hurts in the meantime when you don't see that. And it's not a person's fault that he's not seeing that, or at least as far as I can tell. I don't know how to judge a person that it's his. He could be looking in this way or looking in that way, and he would just not get up. He wouldn't be as outside in. You know, this truth is liberating. You know, this truth is truly liberating, and it's a, you know, we have our feelings, we have our hurt, our upset, our anxiety, our distress, and I guess what I'm coming back to is that when I know what's true about those feelings, that they're not coming from anything other than in this moment's divine thought, even my ability to see insightfully how divine thought works, or my lack thereof, my lack of insightful understanding about divine thought, even that is something I'm not in control over. But I can hold that space. I can hold the space of truth on whatever level I can hold it. And that is unquestionably going to make room for less judgment. I'm still anxious. I'm still struggling. I'm still finding that I can't navigate this. I'm still living in this distress or anger or whatever it is. You know, we get judgmental about our lack of equilibrium. We get judgmental about our internal distress. And then when we learn about the inside-out understanding, we get judgmental about our lack of inside-out understanding, you know, well, that's also part of, that's not independent of the truth. There is no other truth than I'm seeing and I'm seeing insightfully or understanding what is it that the Almighty is making available to me. And there's a possibility of less judgment for me. There's a possibility of a little less judgment about the emotional state that I'm standing in. And that ends up supporting my internal wisdom, my divine connection, the magic of righting the ship. So, those are my thoughts for this week. I want to remind everyone that I welcome your comments and calls either at 845-393-1529 or at info@yourcenterforwellbeing.com. And of course, a reminder that this week is, we are now 10 days before the annual conference. Be in touch, join us, participate, and have a wonderful Shabbos and a wonderful week.